reaction was on the video that Lisa shared. Protests grew yesterday after they've been going on for several days. Yesterday's were organized by the local chapter of the NAACP and a local activist group. And there were several hundred people who were downtown outside of City Hall, and they have remained peaceful so far.
Okay, now Matt, what happens now?
The eight officers who fired the shots are placed on paid administrative leave. Akron's police chief, Stephen Milette, had this to say about what's expected, what sort of answers are now needed from the officers themselves.
When they make that most critical decision to point their firearm at another human being and pull the trigger, they've got to be ready to explain why they did what they did. They need to be able to articulate what specific threats they were facing. And that goes for every round that goes down the barrel of their gun.
Media, Matt, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
On the line with us now is Bobby DiCello. He is a member of the legal team representing Jaylen Walker's family. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So this video is hard to watch. We just heard a description of this crescendo video. What was your biggest concern about the way police responded here?
The absence of a threatening movement. And I'm not trying to be glib in any way. When we sat with the chief of police who played the video for us on Thursday night of the previous week, we actually heard him say he had looked for but hadn't yet found this threatening movement. And then we go to the press conference yesterday and we hear him now say something about, moving to the waistband area. This was now the second possible story that we'd gotten from him, because although he had said to us he couldn't find anything, the officers were telling him, and I don't know which officers they were, that he may have been coming out of a shooting stance, none of which is true. And most importantly, as we sit here right now, as I'm talking to you right now, not a single officer involved has issued a statement to anyone that we know of. And so what we fear and truly believe is that this is an orchestrated kind of harmonizing of events so that the officers can fall in line and then write their statements and provide that to BCI.
Now, the police chief did call the body cam video shocking. What do you see when you look at that footage?
I see a killing. I don't see an arrest. I see the end of a life for no reason. I see a problem in America today when young black men go out that way.
Now, police say you can hear a sound consistent with a gunshot on the video. Traffic cam footage shows what looks like a muzzle flash, and officers told dispatch there was a shot fired from that car door. Let's say that was a gunshot, or at least police thought it was a gunshot. Does that in any way explain what we saw in these videos?
No. What it does explain is that these officers were charged up, were not trained properly, failed to de-escalate, failed to contain their own reactions to those words, shot fired or shots fired, and attacked my client. I mean, what's very, very clear is that when he pulls over and you can see the car and the flashlights of the officer pointing it at, their flashlights at the car, you can see him bail out and start sprinting across first some grass and then an open parking lot. And as he's running and starts to make just a turn, look over his shoulder, bam. And it's not just a bam in things. The city of Akron made one tiny small step in the right direction by passing a law as recently as last year to get this video out as quickly as it did. We applaud that. That's good. All cities across America should have similar laws that require this information to get out. But what needs to happen for my client's case and for all young black Americans today who are getting out of their cars is there must be laws in place and there must be procedures in place that protect them.
It feels like we keep having these conversations, though, calls for justice, protests after black men are killed by police. Will anything be different this time?
I'm not naive. Of course, we know that these calls for change could sound hollow.
Injured at least eight others. Adam Rainey reports from Rome.
The avalanche was captured in dramatic video footage as it swept down the mountainside. Several people were killed immediately in the rush of ice, rock, and debris that moved with ferocious speed through an area known as the Marmolada. Rescuers were shaken by what they saw as they rushed to the area in helicopters.
It was a crazy scene where the bodies were found, because there were blocks of ice and enormous rocks.
To Italian state television after they paused their search on Sunday.
We had to suspend the search in the afternoon because of the risk presented by hot temperatures.
Temperatures in the area have spiked above 50 degrees in recent days, well above average, and will be high again today, complicating efforts to keep searching in the area of the avalanche. Speaking to the Italian daily Corriere della Sera, climate scientist Renato Colucci said the crack in the glacier is directly related to climate change. Climate scientists say the glacier, the largest in northeastern Italy's Dolomites, will likely disappear within 20 to 30 years. It has already decreased greatly in recent years, although people still crack. The Mediterranean basin, including Italy, southern Europe, and northern Africa, has been labeled a climate change hotspot by UN scientists. On Italian TV and across social media, authorities are sharing phone numbers for families and friends of people missing in the area to call. There are trauma therapists providing counseling at the base camp where families have gathered. For NPR News, I'm Adam Rainey in Rome.
This is NPR News.
8:19 now. Thanks for tuning in for Morning Edition on Wisconsin Public Radio. Many Americans are traveling again, and the airlines can't keep up with demand.
This is the worst I've ever seen in the 37 years I've been around this industry.
Tens of thousands of flights have been delayed or canceled in recent weeks, and staffing shortages are only part of the problem. We'll hear more about what's going on in 15 minutes.
Let's be real. It's not a huge surprise that the amount of people trying to buy a home is slowing.
We listed 5 houses last week, and we're seeing that the showings are down and the offers are down.
I'm Kimberly Adams, the state of real estate, next time on Marketplace.
Tune in for Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes in artists on State Street in downtown Madison. More is at anthologymadison.com.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Tuesdays at the Shell Concert Series in Panoia Park runs through August. The free public concerts take place Tuesday evenings beginning at 6. The lineup is on the Kenosha's website, kenosha.org.
In the weather forecast today, partly sunny in the south with rain and thunderstorms. Heavy rain is possible. The rest of the state will be cloudy with showers and thunderstorms likely. Highs from the upper 70s to the upper 80s, but only in the upper 50s near Lake Superior.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Nature Conservancy, nature.org. And from Zoom, used by 500,000 businesses, a platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video, enabling real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And from Jones Day, an integrated partnership collaboratively providing legal services for more than a century. 43 offices, 5 continents, serving clients as one firm worldwide. Learn more at jonesday.com.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Abby Martinez.
And I'm Leila Fadel. Artillery battles and missile strikes in Ukraine are creating an environmental disaster that could last longer than the war itself, NPR's Nathan Rott reports.
Grass blanket the forest floor in these woods west of the northern Ukrainian town of Zhytomyr. Our guide, Viktor Radishinsky, excitably IDs the tall trees on either side.
Okay.
Beech tree.
The same in California.
Yeah, I live in California.
Radishinsky is part of a team of ecological and environmental inspectors who are here to show us a small example of the environmental damage caused by Russia's invasion. Roughly a quarter mile into the woods, we hit a wide trench dug into the forest floor.
It was dug out to prevent fire spreading.
So this is a fire line we're walking on.
On the other side of the trench, the forest floor is scorched black, and there's a tangle of downed, burnt trees. A gash, maybe 20 yards across, has been cleaved through the canopy above, and debris dots the ground all around.
These are the pieces of the plane.
Earlier in the war, a Ukrainian fighter jet in a dogfight with two Russian planes crashed into these woods. A jagged piece of metal is lodged into a burnt tree some 20 feet overhead.
So the plane crashed here and started a wildfire?
То есть здесь упал самолёт, ну, впав літак, і почалася пожежа, так?
Він зірвався.
It exploded.
Wow. The 27-year-old pilot did not survive. Yevgeny Medvedovsky, the chief of the region's Department of Ecological Inspection, says Ukraine's military took the bulk of the wreckage away from this area more than 2 months ago. But you can still smell the jet fuel that seeped into the ground, a concern for the water supplies of two nearby villages. This pollution, Medvedovsky says, will be with this place for a long time. Medvedovsky and other ecological inspectors around the country have been coming to sites like this wherever they can, collecting soil samples, water, and air. They're visiting fuel depots destroyed by Russian missile strikes, industrial sites and factories, battlefields and blast sites. Many places are still inaccessible or still occupied by Russia. All of the information is then sent on to Kyiv to the country's lead office of environmental inspection and its head, Oleksiy Obrazon.
Детальна фіксація вже відбулася.
Even though there's not much precedent in international courts for that. I ask why the world should care about environmental damage given the horrific crimes against people suffered in Bucha, Mariupol, and the country's east.
Важко відповісти. Україна публічно.
The world now knows about Ukraine, Obrazon says, and the problems it's facing. But these environmental problems aren't just Ukraine's, he stresses. They cross borders. They are the world's. To get a better sense of that larger impact, we went to Tuzlovsky Lagoons National Park, along the Black Sea in the grass-covered steppe of Ukraine's southern coast.
This is pretty.
Look how big it is. It's about 27,000 hectares.
Ivan Rusev helped create this national park. And even though this area doesn't have crashing jets, parts of this park were bombed, and much of its beaches are now covered in mines. And Rusev says the impact of the war here is devastating. Start with the normally huge population of migratory birds.
They disappeared because it was very big noise from the bombing.
Dolphins, he says, affected by the low-frequency sonar used by Russian warships, have been washing up on shore.
We estimate that all dolphin which has died from this war, about 2,000 dolphin dying during three months.
Then there's the fires.
Fire is a big problem. For example, about 15 kilometers, it was a big fire 2 weeks ago.
Fire started by a flare that was difficult to contain because of mines. Zoom out. And there are concerns that Russia's invasion of Ukraine could make regular wildfires difficult to contain in other parts of the world as well. Last year, Turkey, northern Russia, Greece, and other parts of Europe experienced devastating wildfire seasons.
We're looking at...
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn,